From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, where we bring you insights, analysis, and interviews on some of the most important issues facing you and your family. And we do it all from a biblical worldview. So for the next hour, I invite you to be a part of the conversation as we delve into the issues with clarity, integrity, and a relentless pursuit of truth. Washington Watch starts now.
Definitely the most damage since I've been governor that I've seen. I've seen a lot of damage. I've been around the state for, it's my sixth year, but what I saw downtown Sulphur, it's unbelievable.
That was Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt discussing the devastation left in the wake of the tornadoes that hit the Midwest over the weekend. We'll get an update from Washington Watch correspondent Victoria Marshall. Well, Congress is back in Washington this week and look for the House to address the orchestrated chaos on university campuses.
This has become a very unfortunate and dangerous trend across the country. By some estimates this week, as many as 200 college and university campuses had some form of this anti-Semitic, anti-Israel protest. It's a pro-Hamas protest, frankly, is what it's become.
That was House Speaker Mike Johnson with me this weekend on my weekend show, This Week on the Hill. We'll talk with Michigan Congressman Tim Walberg, who is a member of the House Education Committee, about what actions Congress could propose. And here is a surprisingly rational articulation of the situation in Israel from Secretary of State Antony Blinken today at the World Economic Forum in Saudi Arabia.
I don't hear anyone reflecting on the fact that, obviously, the atrocity of October 7th never should have happened, but once it happened, everything could have been over in an instant. If Hamas had stopped hiding behind civilians, put down its weapons, given back the hostages, and surrendered, none of the suffering that we've seen since would have happened. So, where is the demand on Hamas? There's been silence. It's almost as if it's been erased from the story.
I have to say, I commend the Secretary of State for making those comments there in Saudi Arabia. He's actually right. Well, despite these facts that he has laid out and that the international community has, the International Criminal Court is reportedly preparing to issue arrest warrants in connection with the war in Gaza, not for Hamas, but for senior Israeli officials, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. We'll get the latest from Carolyn Glick, senior contributing editor of the Jewish News Syndicate. And in a domestic version of this lawfare, President Trump will be back in court this week.
I think all these trials are political. I think it's selective prosecution. I think what's going on in New York is an outrage. The case is 8 years ago. They created a crime just for Trump. I think it's selective prosecution for political purposes.
That was South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham on CNN's State of the Union yesterday addressing the lawsuits being brought against former President Trump. We're going to get a summary of all those cases and the status of them from Mike Davis, president of Article 3 Project. You won't want to miss that. And are you ready for some good news? Well, here it is. This Thursday is the National Day of Prayer. Just in time. This year's theme, Lift Up the Word, Light Up the World. Very timely. We're going to talk with Kathy Brenzel, who is the president of the National Day of Prayer Task Force, a little bit later here on Washington Watch, and talk about how you can be a part of the event. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you. Be sure and check it out. Well, as I mentioned, tornadoes ripped through multiple Midwest and Great Plains states over the weekend, leaving at least five dead with homes and businesses destroyed in its wake. Here with an update is Washington Watch correspondent Victoria Marshall. Victoria, devastating weather this weekend in various parts of the country. Give us an update.
Yeah, like you said, Tony, you know, there were hundreds of tornadoes that tore through America's heartland, killing at least five people, destroying homes and businesses. And it was just horrific. I mean, Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt has said that this is the worst damage he's seen in his 6 years as governor. But that same storm has now moved down toward the Gulf Coast. And on Monday, it caused extreme thunderstorms and rain, flash flooding in southeastern Texas, especially in Houston. And so hopefully the National Weather Service has said that the we're going to see the worst of the rain this evening, and then tomorrow there'll be still be some rain in the Great Plains, Mississippi Valley region, but hopefully we've seen the worst of it today.
Well, of course, once the storm's passed, the cleanup and rebuilding takes a long time. That is a long-term project. And I believe our friends at Samaritan's Purse will soon be on the ground, if they're not already on the ground in many of these locations.
Yes, they are on the ground, thankfully.
All right, Victoria, thanks so much for the update. Obviously, we'll continue to watch and probably get an update later this week from Samaritan's Purse. Appreciate it. Well, anti-Israeli and pro-Hamas demonstrations continued to embroil college campuses nationwide as university officials grapple with a crisis really of their own making. And the Biden administration struggles for a coherent response. As these demonstrations show no sign of slowing, many have questioned the source of the protesters' outside funding. Is this an orchestrated effort? And has the time come for a congressional response? Joining me now to discuss this is Congressman Tim Walberg. He serves on the House Committee on Education and the Workforce and the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Michigan. Congressman Walberg, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you today.
Tony, good to be with you. Appreciate just listening to some of the reports you just went through, especially with what Blinken had to say.
That was an encouraging statement from this administration that seems to have been backing away from Israel. I wonder, and I'm going to pose this as a question, Tim, if they are beginning to see the results of their rhetoric, and maybe that startled them to see what's happening on these college campuses.
Oh, absolutely. I think the lack of leadership coming from the top at the White House, that being President Biden, has enabled this to take place. This was the president who stood at his inauguration 3.5 years ago, and I sat there and I listened as he said he was going to be a president for all the people and he was going to unite this country. This country is divided more than ever. And now when we see what's going on with our closest friend in the Middle East, an ally, and the attacks on them, I think of the international court, is unbelievable. As opposed to Hamas, who started this, who broke the ceasefire that was in place. And now college students are being allowed not simply to demonstrate. That's part of college life, demonstrations, but not violent, not demonstrations that make certain students, in this case Jews, feel for their lives and their academic careers. And even some who are not Jewish but stand with their Jewish peers afraid of doing so for fear that some propagandizing professor will knock their grades back. It's an atrocious time on campus. It has to stop. We teach our kids from the earliest age that they're supposed to obey the authorities, starting with their parents. Why aren't we doing that right now in saying that rules and laws ought to be followed and the police don't have to come in and break up the fights that are going on?
You know, Congressman, this is not the first example where we've seen college administrators in many ways almost really fostering an environment for this type of lawlessness. But last week, House Speaker Mike Johnson, along with some of your colleagues, visited Columbia University, where they said Congress should consider the billions of dollars in taxpayer money that flow to these universities if the university administrations cannot get their acts together. Your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I think that's the only tool that we have that might get their attention. That's removing funds. We can't get them in other ways. We've had presidents of universities in front of our committee, starting with three of the most egregious examples initially that went on, with MIT and with Penn And now we have Colombia that comes into perspective, and there's a total lack of leadership there, unwilling to follow the rules from the get-go. And now we have it escalating all across the country. I appreciate some presidents of universities, and I fear saying the name of some in my own state that I've had communications with recently, within the last several days, who have significantly stood up and said, we have rules in place that we're going to follow. We're not going to divest, as some as the students are asking us to do. We are expecting to have a graduation commencement program, especially for students who, in many cases, didn't have their high school commencement because of COVID. Now, if these ruffians and these instigators, many of which are coming from outside the campus and pulling students in, have their way, these students won't have commencements. And more importantly, they're not having education. So why put federal dollars behind education programs that aren't educating our students, but rather are propagandizing them to be not only anti-Israel and anti-Semitic, but anti-American as well? Mm-hmm. That's a danger, and that's something that can't be allowed under First Amendment liberties.
Yeah, I just want to point out, you made reference to some of the other college presidents. It was one of the hearings, multiple hearings, that the House Education Committee had that actually led to results. So for those that, you know, want to say, well, what are the Republicans doing? These hearings delving into these issues do have effect. We've seen, you know, the pressure put on some of these institutions as a result of the statements made by its leadership. I want to ask you along those lines, Congressman Wahlberg. You said outside agitators that have come onto campus pulling these kids in. There's a lot of suspicion that money is being put into this effort to disrupt the college campuses, but to send a, you know, to monopolize the media, get the media to focus on this and make this the narrative. Is there a chance that Congress might look into the funding and where, if there's some kind of illegal funding taking place?
Yeah, I think we have to do that as well. We know that there's propaganda that's coming in from Russia, from China, and certainly from Iran. When Iran says that Israel is the little Satan and the United States is the big Satan, and both should be wiped off the face of this earth, we ought to believe them that they will do what is necessary to break us down. Now, they know that they're not going to break down Israel. Netanyahu and the Israelis are going to stand and fight as they have. They're going to push back against the international courts. But if they can break down America from the inside, what a great victory that could be. And I certainly think that that is part of what's going on right now, Tony, that Iran and other instigators of breaking down the greatest country ever known on the face of this earth because of our freedom, our constitutional democracy that's in place, that if they could do it through this on the college campuses, breaking down the families, breaking down our morality, breaking down the areas of education that are supposed to be fostering this great entity that's called the United States, then they've won the course.
Yeah.
We have to keep eyes open.
Well, Congressman Tim Wahlberg, I want to encourage you to continue doing what the Republicans in the House have been doing, shining a light on this. You might not have the authority to stop it, but you can create the pressure by exposing it. And I believe you are spot on with your analysis. So all I can say, Congressman, is go get them. Bring us the facts. We can show America and create that pressure. Tim, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to see you, and thanks for getting the message out.
All right, Congressman Tim Wahlberg of Michigan. All right, stick with us. Carolyn Glick joins us next to talk about Israel. What's happening? Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Monday. Website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, according to news reports, Israeli officials are concerned that the International Criminal Court is preparing arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other senior government officials. Now, if the ICC proceeds, the charges are believed to include accusations of stopping the humanitarian aid delivery to the Gaza Strip, as well as alleged harsh reaction to Hamas's attack on October the 7th. Now, what precedent would such warrants have for a democratic nation defending itself against an attack? Joining me now to discuss this and more is Carolyn Glick. She is the senior contributing editor at the Jewish News Syndicate and host of the Carolyn Glick Show on JNS. Carolyn, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
It's great to be on your program, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Before we delve into the International Criminal Court, let's talk this latest news about a ceasefire hostage release. Where does that stand?
You know, the United States is pushing very hard to get a ceasefire. They have been for quite some time. And right now, there apparently is some sort of a deal that the Egyptians are putting forward. It's not at all clear where Israel stands on this. Certainly, it's fairly clear that most of the Israeli public opposes it, but we'll just have to see how things develop. But right now, we have three brigades that are poised to go into the town of Rafah and take over Hamas's final outpost in Gaza and take over the international border with Egypt. So the Egyptians don't want us to take over the international border. And Hamas, of course, doesn't want us to be defeated. And weirdly, the United States seems to be on the side of Egypt and of Hamas in this and does not, under any circumstances, apparently want Israel to carry out this operation without carrying out of which Israel will lose the war. So it's all sort of a very, very distressing situation all around. We have to do this operation in order to win. And it seems that the combined powers of the entire international community are pushing as hard as they can to prevent us from doing so.
Well, I think what we saw 2 weekends ago with Iran directly attacking Israel, and some of them even stating that it was because of a weakness they perceived in Israel not being able to eliminate Hamas. And the prime minister has made this very clear. They have to eliminate Hamas and show that they are totally committed to protecting their people. Today, the State Department spokesman said they do not support, the U.S. does not support what the International Criminal Court is doing. I played a clip of Secretary of State Blinken making a very strong statement in support of Israel at the World Economic Forum. However, this threat from the International Criminal Court seems to be putting pressure on Israel in possibly, I think, adding to that pressure of pushing them toward a ceasefire. Is that a correct analysis?
I think it's clear that the timing here is key, that, again, you know, along with all of the other things that are going on with U.S. pressure and with European pressure, U.N. pressure, Egyptian pressure, et cetera, Hamas pressure, and psychological warfare. So here you have this act by the ICC where they let it be known to the Israelis that they intend to issue international arrest warrants against our leadership, our civilian and military leadership, imminently. It was expected that they would be issued today, and now the anticipation is that they're going to be issued on Thursday. And then there's another aspect to this, which is that they can issue and seal arrest warrants and not tell the subjects of those arrest warrants that they are under arrest warrant. And then, you travel abroad and essentially are kidnapped because you're nabbed at an airport without even knowing that somebody wants to arrest you.
So I mean, that's outrageous. The elected leader of a nation, a democratic nation, fearful of leaving his country, of possibly, I don't know, I mean, could it happen in the United States? I mean, certainly the United States would not allow that to occur.
No, but I mean, and it's less the national leaders than it is lower level officers, because what the fear is and what we've come to understand is that the threat is not only to the prime minister and the defense minister and the chief of staff of the IDF, which is what we anticipate having arrest warrants issued against imminently. It's also that it'll open up a cascade, and then we'll see division commanders and brigade commanders and even regular reserve soldiers who carry out operations in Rafah, that they'll end up getting arrested. So it wouldn't so much, the fear isn't so much of the people at the national level, at the top level of government and the military, but rather the people who are in the mid-level or even just line soldiers.
It has a chilling,
we're concerned about. Look, I mean,
a chilling effect upon those who serve in the IDF, which is pretty much everybody in Israel that's of age.
And I mean, again, the thing is that, you know, we're a people's army. We're not the French Foreign Legion. We don't hire mercenaries from abroad to protect us. These are our children. And, you know, it's insane. We're fighting a war for our survival against genocidal terrorists who hide behind civilians and who carried out the largest terrorist attack against Israelis in history on October 7th and continue to hold 133 hostages in Gaza, both dead and alive. We don't know how many are dead and how many are alive because Hamas refuses to tell us who's alive. So, I mean, this is all psychological torture and a war of genocide against our country. And here we're being told that we're war criminals for trying to prosecute this to victory. It's a very shocking set of affairs that we're faced with today.
Final question, Carolyn, only about 30 seconds left, but apparently the prime minister and his advisors taking this very seriously, reportedly having a conversation with President Biden last night about this.
Right. I mean, look, the only person who can stop this is President Biden. President Biden stood behind the appointment of the ICC prosecutor, Karim Khan, and if Biden put his foot down and said this cannot stand, then it wouldn't, just as when President Trump issued the executive order causing, you know, strangling sanctions against the ICC if they went against U.S. military personnel or allied military personnel. So, too, Biden could do it tomorrow if he wanted, or today, but he hasn't done so.
Another example where we need to stand with Israel and their right to protect themselves. Carolyn Glick, always great to hear from you and gain from your insights. Really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, Carolyn Glick. find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. By the way, for information regarding Israel and the Middle East, she's a great resource for you. So you can find out more information by going to TonyPerkins.com. And by the way, another reminder, we need to pray for Israel and stand with them. And we're going to be doing that on Sunday, May the 19th. To find out more, text Israel to 67742. Speaking of prayer, we're going to talk about the National Day of Prayer next.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Hey, thanks for joining us on this Monday afternoon for Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources there for you, so be sure and check it out. You can also email me, Tony, TonyPerkins.com. And once again, to join us on May the 19th in standing for and praying with, or actually I should say praying for and standing with Israel, text Israel to 67742. We're encouraging churches across the country on that Sunday just to take a few moments to pray for Israel, to pray for peace for everybody in that land. Everybody. We can stand together and pray and counter this narrative that we see out there today on these college campuses. The church can shine a light on the truth. Well, speaking of prayer, this Thursday, May the 2nd, will mark the 73rd annual National Day of Prayer. This is an opportunity for Americans to pray together in faith, standing on the promises of God. You know, our founding fathers, they knew our country, that our future depended upon our dependence upon God and remaining close to Him. Well, this year's gathering, quite frankly, could not come at a more needful time. Joining me now to discuss this is Kathy Brenzel. She is the president of the National Day of Prayer Task Force. Kathy, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for taking time out of your very busy week to join me.
Oh, thank you, Tony. What a pleasure to be here.
So talk about the theme of this year's National Day of Prayer gathering and how folks can be a part of it.
Oh, we are so grateful. This year, the theme is Lift Up the Word, Light Up the World. And as you were just saying, you know, the church needs to shine a light where there is so much darkness. And so we know darkness is an absence of light. And when we step into it and when we pray into it with the word of God, it's going to shine like the noonday sun. And so we are excited as millions of people, I'm not exaggerating, at tens of thousands of gatherings across the nation get together and pray on this first Thursday of May, by law, the National Day of Prayer. So in communities and capitals and parks and on the steps of government buildings all across our nation, in churches, people will be gathering to pray. We'll be praying here in our nation's capital as well, and then broadcasting around the world that night. And I will be so excited to see what May 3rd looks like on Friday after those millions of people have lifted up the word of God and prayed for our neighbors and our nation, and God's heart and hand is moved.
Well, Kathy, I love the theme, lift up the word. That is our theme here at the Family Research Council, even for a public policy organization, encouraging people to be in the word. It is, it's truth, it's our source of hope, it's our source of courage, and it just gives us the direction that we need as a nation. The passage this year, 2 Samuel chapter 22, verse 29, "For you are my lamp, O Lord, and my God lightens my darkness. For by you I can run against a troop, and by my God I can leap over a wall." This, it's so timely. Speak to where our country is right now and why we need to come together in prayer.
Right. This theme came from a time of fervent prayer and holy frustration, quite frankly, because all we were talking about was the darkness. Our neighborhoods are getting darker. Our schools are getting darker. Our nation is getting darker. But again, darkness is the absence of light. And so we have to remember that Scripture tells us, God tells us, we have been removed from the dominion of darkness and brought into the kingdom of light. Jesus said, we are the light of the world, the salt and the light. And his word is a lamp to our feet and a light to our path. And so we can run into whatever the circumstances are for the day. Jesus said, in this world, you will have troubles. You will have tribulation, but right. Take heart.
Right.
That's take courage, right? Take my word and run the sword of the Spirit and run into the battle of the day. We run in victory.
You know, Kathy, I'm not going to ask you to speak this from a political standpoint, but from a cultural standpoint, is there this effort afoot just to get Christians, to get Bible-believing Christians to retreat from sharing that word and holding up that light?
Absolutely. I think that the enemy is working really hard. And when I say enemy, I mean Satan. I'm not talking
right.
about people. That the enemy is working really hard to get us to be quiet, to put a bus roll over our head, to put on that cultural camouflage and stand off in the shadows in some sort of fear of, I don't want to be that person. You know, I don't want to make waves. And God's is saying, I didn't put you here. I didn't establish you here for such a time as this to keep quiet and live comfortably. He brought us here to be the light. And so we are called to vote. We are called to speak up and to stand up for our biblical freedoms that God has given us and our founding fathers fully recognized and wrote about in our founding documents, right?
Pray, vote, stand. Music to my ears. We need to be praying. And this is a great opportunity for those that might be a little intimidated to join with others at National Day of Prayer gatherings all across this country. And they can find out more by going to nationaldayofprayer.org, nationaldayofprayer.org. You can find an event near you and be a part of it and join with others in praying for our nation. And Kathy, I look forward to being with you on Capitol Hill on Thursday as we pray for the nation.
Oh, thank you for joining us. It's going to be a powerful day.
All right, Kathy, thanks so much for joining us. And folks, check it out, nationaldayofprayer.org. You'll also be able to watch the national gathering that morning, Thursday morning. I'll be praying for the families of our nation there on Capitol Hill along with Kathy. All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking about the lawfare, the left's lawfare against President Donald Trump. Stay tuned for more Washington Watch straight ahead.
Chris-
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/pro-life-men to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
All right, just a reminder to join us in our effort to pray for and stand with Israel on May the 19th. Text the word Israel to 67742. Individuals and churches can participate. Just a matter of standing together and praying for Israel in a very public and visible way. So text the word Israel to 67742. Our word for today comes from Judges chapter 2. When all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord nor the work which he had done for Israel. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the idols. They forsook the Lord and they served Baal and the Ashtaroths. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, so he delivered them into the hands of plunderers who despoiled them, and he sold them into the hands of their enemies all around so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. You know, the Old Testament reveals this avoidable cycle that leads to misery, spiritual apostasy, turning away from God, which was followed by moral chaos, which brought political oppression, and eventually that oppression became so great that people would repent and turn back to God, and he would deliver them. You know what? A lot of pain can be avoided if we just keep our eyes on the Lord. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742 to find out how you can join us on our daily journey through the Bible. Well, the left's coordinated efforts at lawfare against former President Trump continues as the criminal prosecution in New York City enters its third week. Now, this comes just after the Supreme Court heard oral arguments last week in a case regarding presidential immunity. And as prosecution from Fulton County, Georgia District Attorney Fannie Willis and Special Counsel Jack Smith continue, with President Biden continuing to insist that democracy is on the ballot in the 2024 election. How should we respond to the anti-democratic lawfare that is taking over our courts? Joining me now to discuss this is Mike Davis, founder of the Article 3 Project. Previously served in all three branches of government, including as chief counsel for nominations to Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley in the Department of Justice during the George W. Bush administration and staff of the Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
So I'd like to start. There's so many different pieces out there. I'd like to get kind of an overview of how the left is using this lawfare against President Trump, the cases that are out there, and kind of a status on them.
So these Democrat prosecutors waited 30 months when they figured out that Trump was running for election again. They brought this unprecedented lawfare and election interference on many different fronts. There are five different criminal indictments now with Arizona, the Arizona AG, this Democrat AG in Arizona, who literally stole the election in Arizona because the Democrats disenfranchised Republican voters on election day, and they haven't counted 9,000 ballots. This Democrat AG just brought another criminal indictment against several of Trump's former aides and lawyers and supporters. She named Trump as an unindicted co-conspirator. So now we have four criminal cases where Trump is named as a defendant, one where he's an unindicted co-conspirator. You have New York Attorney General Tish James, who brought a civil fraud lawsuit for Trump for the non-fraud of paying back sophisticated Wall Street banks in full on time as agreed with interest. You had Jean Carroll bringing a bogus defamation case against Trump. This is lawfare on many fronts, and it is coordinated by President Biden, his White House, and his Justice Department, and there's evidence of that. There's evidence that President Trump's fingerprints are on all four of these criminal indictments through Jonathan Suh, his deputy White House counsel, who orchestrated and greenlighted the Mar-a-Lago raid, which led to Jay Bratt and Jack Smith's two criminal indictments against Trump for presidential records he's allowed to have under the Presidential Records Act, and the January 6th indictment. You have Nathan Wade billing his time 16 hours at $250 an hour, Fulton County DA, Fannie Willis's boyfriend / special prosecutor, who billed his time to meet with the Biden White House, including the Biden White House counsel, before Fannie Willis brought her unprecedented indictment against Trump. And then you have Matthew Colangelo getting deployed from the number three office, a senior Justice Department appointee deployed from the Biden Justice Department to Soros-funded Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg's office to bring the felony charge up there for settling a nuisance claim, which is not a felony. And they had to come up with a bogus legal theory passed over by the prior Manhattan DA, Cy Vance, the Manhattan U.S. attorney, the Federal Election Commission, and Alvin Bragg himself until Biden sent Colangelo.
Mike, you just said a lot, and I don't even know where to start with that. Other than this, do you have a chart that lays out these connections? Many years ago, I worked in anti-terrorism, and as there's asymmetrical, we would have to draw out the connections, and we would show the links after going through several layers. This sounds intriguing. Would make a great chart to see all of these connections that lead back to President Biden.
Yeah, I mean, President Biden's fingerprints are directly on all four of these criminal prosecutions. Look, this is a criminal conspiracy by President Biden, his White House staff, his attorney general, his Justice Department, and these Democrat AGs in New York and Arizona, and these Democrat DAs in New York City and Fulton County, Georgia. This is a criminal, and also some lawyers on the outside who are coordinating with these government officials. This is a criminal conspiracy against rights. They are violating the civil rights of President Trump, his co-defendant Walt Nauta, his 18 co-defendants in the Georgia case, these defendants in Arizona. This is a criminal conspiracy to violate their civil rights for the purpose of interfering in the election. And there are going to be severe consequences legally, politically, and financially.
So, Mike, let me ask you this question. I'm going to ask you right now to kind of, this is speculation. This would be speculation on your part. So I'm just putting that out there clear so everybody understands that. If Trump were not running for president, if somehow someone else had secured the nomination for the Republican slot for president, would this be going on? Would they have dropped all these cases?
There's no chance this would be happening. They waited 30 months to bring these unprecedented indictments. They tried to time these trials back to back to back in 2024 during the heat of the presidential campaign. They wanted President Trump stuck in a courtroom like they've done in New York City with this Democrats, Manhattan DA, Juan Merchan, who donated to Trump in 2020, donated to another anti-Trump cause whose adult daughter, Lauren Merchan, has raised $100 million off of her father's unprecedented criminal trial. They're working with Soros-funded DA Alvin Bragg, Matthew Colangelo from the Biden Justice Department. This is obviously a criminal conspiracy with these prosecutors, judges, witnesses, lawyers on the outside running this lawfare like Andrew Weissman and many others. And there has to be severe legal, political, and financial consequences come January
20th, 2025. So Mike Davis, let me ask you this question. Is the left in the, I mean, this is so blatant. I mean, it's so blatant as you just laid it out. It doesn't take a whole lot to see that this is coordinated, how they're hammering Trump, trying to keep him from being the next president. Is this going to backfire on them from the standpoint of the American people seeing through this? And actually, we see it in the polls that it appears to be helping Donald Trump, even though he's not out there campaigning.
Well, I hate being modest, but the Article 3 Project has done over 3,000 media hits over the last 21 months. Since the Mar-a-Lago raid, we've done constant social media. We've done opinion pieces. We have been the tip of the spear against this lawfare and election interference against President Trump, and we have turned lemons into lemonade. After the Mar-a-Lago raid, there weren't a lot of people, particularly Republican lawyers, who were defending Trump. Now the rats are swimming back to the ship because it looks like this lawfare is backfiring spectacularly on these Democrats, including President Biden. It's going to propel President Trump back into the White House. And I don't think that's what the Democrats intended, but the Article 3 Project had a hand in this.
Well, you know, I'm prompted to ask, has the FBI knocked at your door? I mean, you seem to be a threat to exposing what the deep state is doing.
Well, I dare them. I will gladly go to jail before I go silent. There's no way they're going to gag me. There's no way they're going to imprison me. We have to make sure that this election is free and fair, and we're going to have the American people, not these Democrat prosecutors and Democrat judges and Democrat witnesses and Democrat operatives in these Democrat hellholes like New York, D.C., and Atlanta, pick our president. The Supreme Court is on the line. Our God-given rights to speak, to worship, to protect ourselves are on the line. If you think the COVID lockdowns and the BLM riots were bad in 2020, wait for the Hamas riots in 2024. Vote as early as possible. Bank your vote so you're not scared to vote on election day, because the Democrats have proven they will do whatever it takes to win, including trying to put their leading presidential candidate in prison, to die in prison rather than to face him on November 5th, 2024.
Wow. Really good advice. We've been encouraging to do the same, not necessarily because I saw the Hamas pandemic coming this way, but I know there's going to be something that they roll out to try to mimic what we saw with the COVID virus. So building on that, Mike Davis, what should we be watching for? What should the American public be watching for and be prepared for?
Well, I would say this. The Supreme Court is almost certainly going to, by the end of June, going to rule in the Fisher case for the other January 6th defendants that the Biden Justice Department contorted, politicized, and weaponized a post-Enron obstruction of justice statute that relates to corporate fraud and weaponized it against political enemies, including President Trump and his supporters on January 6th. Two of the four charges against President Trump in the January 6th case by Jack Smith are likely going to be going away after the Supreme Court rules on the Fisher case, or severely curtailed. And then the Supreme Court's going to rule almost certainly going to rule that the president of the United States, any president of the United States, is immune from criminal prosecution for his official acts, not his personal acts, his official acts. And that's going to the Supreme Court's going to remand that case to the D.C. District Court, D.C. Obama Judge Tommy Shuckin, for an evidentiary hearing. The bottom line is this New York City Bragg case, this dog of a case in New York, may be the only case that gets to trial before the election. The American people are going to put President Trump back in the White House on November 5th, 2024, and come January 20th, 2025, when he is sworn in, there are going to be severe legal, political, and financial consequences for this Democrat lawfare and election defense. These are Republic-ending tactics by the Democrats, and there must be consequences.
I want to ask you a question about the J6 cases, but first, you mentioned New York, and I want to kind of, since that is the one that many think will go forward, did they create this crime to come after President Trump? I mean, this appears to be unprecedented in what they're doing in New York. Is that correct?
Absolutely. They have taken bookkeeping misdemeanors that are time barred, meaning beyond the statute of limitations at best. Essentially, President Trump allegedly paid off a nuisance claim in 2016, like he's done many times in the past, like rich businessmen do many times. You pay off nuisance claims, you have them settle a non-disclosure agreement. That is routine. I was a real lawyer for many years, and I settled those nuisance claims on behalf of clients every week, right? It is routine to do that. And somehow this Alvin Bragg, the Soros-funded Manhattan DA, has brought the first indictment ever against a former president based upon a bogus legal theory that somehow President Trump's settlement of this nuisance claim in 2016, and he booked it in 2017 after the election, somehow that was a campaign finance violation that somehow transformed these misdemeanors that are time barred into felonies that are not. After you throw in COVID and extending the statute of limitations for that, they waited 7 years to go to trial on this bogus legal theory, again, passed over by the prior Manhattan DA, the Manhattan U.S. Attorney, the Federal Election Commission, and now, Bragg himself.
He didn't spend campaign money, but they say that it helped his campaign, therefore it was a campaign donation. Is that correct?
That's right. He spent his own personal money. Right, he didn't even spend business money. It came out of one of his trusts. It's personal money. It's not campaign money. This is a completely bogus theory.
Right.
This is not going to be upheld by the courts, even if it has to go to the Supreme Court of the United States. This is their weakest, dumbest case. This is like when they ran the Michael Avenatti and Julie Swetnick allegations against Kavanaugh, when they brought their six bogus allegations against him. This is the dumbest, worst of their cases.
Mike, we probably don't have time to get a full answer to this, but back to the J6. We got about 30 seconds. The J6 prisoners, if the court rules, will we see many of those cases thrown out?
They should be thrown out, but you're already hearing these Democrat judges and even Republican judges and prosecutors saying that they're going to come up with novel ways to essentially ignore the Supreme Court's ruling by running consecutive sentences instead of the routine concurrent sentences. These judges need to be slapped down hard by the Supreme Court.
Well, Mike, I'm going to explore that further with you, because I think it's a travesty of what we've seen, the weaponization of our own government against our people. Mike Davis, always great to see you. Thank you so much for helping shine light on this.
Thank you.
All right, folks, find out more. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, join us May the 19th as we pray for and stand with Israel. Text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, thanks for being with us today. And until next time, let me leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul that we find in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.
Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.